Good morning. I'll tell you what, go ahead and turn in your Bibles to Judges chapter 13, and we'll be there in a little bit. I'm really excited to share with you this morning. I'm excited about this whole series that we've been going through for flawed heroes of faith through Hebrews chapter 11. And there's a man, if you go through Hebrews 11, what you see is God talks about a lot of different heroes of faith. And then towards the end of the chapter, if you're to look, he says, and now I don't even have time to talk to you about all of them. And so then he says, so I won't even go into, and then he begins to name all of these names. And one of the names that's mentioned is probably one of the most shocking men who made the list. His name is Samson. And when you think about his story, can you believe, seriously, like sometimes I even stop, especially as I was preparing this lesson, because specifically what I've done is I've wanted to find the flawed heroes that are mentioned there. And I had to stop and I go, seriously, I did. I was like, really? What was so heroic about Samson? As far as his faith is concerned, right? And it's hard to see. And so that's what I want to talk with you about. And so I'm really excited about this lesson because here's the deal. It's the application that's been carrying through. It's going to be the same application this morning. Here's the deal. If Samson could make the list, then you can make the list too. Right? And so we're going to continue this thought. But I want to start by asking you a question. Have you ever had to carry a lot of chairs before? I know that's a weird question. It is something most of us have had to do several times. If you've ever been down to Celebrate Recovery or to the Fellowship Hall for any ministry, Celebrate Recovery is where I usually am having to put up chairs, right? But there's a lot of other ministries that go on down there, Pantry and Bible Hour, whatever. And so, especially if we have like a whole church event where we go down there, we eat some good food, usually we're going to call for people to stay after and carry some chairs. Now, there are those people who conveniently go missing right at the right time. And so if that's you, I'm not going to preach my sermon on that right now. But have you ever noticed when you start to look, next time we're down there, y'all are all going to be self-conscious after I talk about this, right? Everybody carries a different amount of chairs, right? And so if you start looking around, people are carrying different amounts of chairs. You know what I mean? Like you've got that you know, sweet, you know, 10-year-old girl who can carry one chair. You know, it's her and O.R. Leslie carrying one chair. And, oh, he is here this morning, yeah. It's okay, I'm holding the mic. Then you got guys like Chris Potek and Richard Benskin, you know, and you look over and they got like 47 chairs, you know, and they're not even straining. It's just like they're walking over and you're like you're walking by with your three chairs, you know, and you're like, oh no, I'm fine, I got it, you know. It's just a horrible situation. No, I'm always appreciative to have them around, but here's the deal: everybody's got different chair carrying strategies. You know what I mean? And you find your own way. You know, some are the, now Chris is kind of the over-the-shoulder kind of guy. Richard, I've noticed you're kind of just the, I'm just going to grab them and I'm just going to go, you know. Chris has got them up here. You know, I'm about a four-chair guy when it comes to the metal chairs. You know what I mean? Now down there, the big chairs in the fellowship hall, I stack about six of them and then I just push them. You know, I'm not lifting those things. So, you know, just saying. But here's the deal. Every now and then, you've been around it in different environments, someone will drop a chair, right? And especially in our fellowship hall, now I'm talking about the metal chairs, okay? If we pull out the old metal chairs and somebody drops a chair down there, how's it sound? You know, I mean, you wake up the entire state of Texas. The sound reverberates off that concrete floor and hits off those walls, and the curtains have helped some with that, but even still, right? It's loud, it's chaotic, and everybody turns and stares at the one who's dropped this chair. Now, every time that I've witnessed someone dropping a chair, And I have never been that person. Let me be absolutely clear, right? Talking about other people. But I've only seen someone drop a chair because they were carrying too many. Right? Not me. Talking about you. Now, I want to start there because, seriously, I want to tell you about a very personal interesting season of my life for a second. This was about 5 years ago. As many of you know, I was in youth ministry when I was in Louisiana, okay? And I was the spiritual director of a camp there. Now, youth ministry is busy, especially during summer, without being over a camp, much less adding that in, right? And so it was a very, very busy time of my life. Now, listen, for 3 weeks during that summer camp, I say 3 weeks, the summer camp was 6 weeks long, and I was out there all 6 weeks. But 3 weeks in particular, the two middle school sessions that we had and the high school session that we had, because of, you know, that was the sessions I was mostly in charge of because of being the youth minister, right? That's my crew. And so when those 200 kids would come in for a week, I looked at those 3 weeks, and they were back to back to back. I calculated that, and I counted them up. I taught 26 scheduled lessons a week for 3 weeks straight. That is 78 lessons in 3 weeks. That's the scheduled ones. There were more that happened a few other times in between. I can't calculate those. It wasn't too many. So I think I hit 80 lessons in 3 weeks. And I had not been preaching every Sunday for 4 years like I have now, right? Like I hadn't been doing this. And so speaking was way more uncomfortable for me at that point in my ministry. And here I was speaking so much, so constantly, and actually, seriously, even talking about it and going back and revisiting that place with you right now brings me a little bit of anxiety, okay? It was rough. There was a lot going on. Now, understand, a lot of that, it's a part of my job. It's just what you sign up for, right? But there was a lot that I needed to tell somebody what I was going through. People didn't realize what was going on and how much I'm preparing and how much I had. And I should have asked someone for help. But listen, here's the deal. This is where I've got to open up. I let my pride get to me. And I just kept telling people, yes. Hey, can you teach this lakeside lesson? Hey, will you do the campfire Devo? Hey, we're going to put you down. And they schedule me for 26. And I just kept saying, yes, 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 I can. I can do that. And what am I doing? I'm picking up another chair. And I'm picking up another chair. And suddenly, I was carrying way more than I was ever meant to carry, way more than I knew I could carry, and the crash was heading my way. You know what I mean? I acted like I had everything under control, under the pretense that this is my job. You know what I mean? Like, I can't act like it's too much for me, because then that just means you're not cut out for the job that you've been assigned. So I can't be stressed with what I've been given, because that's what I'm supposed to take. You know what I mean? And so I acted in front of others like everything was under control. But at home, I was getting into a lot of arguments with Avery, petty things, and things that you look back and you go, you know, that was stupid. And but I would bring it up, and my relationship with her and with my family was hurting. I really didn't have time for anybody else. I only had time for me, because I had to prepare 26 lessons a week. So the way that worked, by the way, in case, just to give you a little more context, I'm the youth minister still. So even when there was a week of camp, I would have to drive out to camp, teach lessons, drive back to the church, teach lessons, drive back out later that night. I would be teaching lessons until midnight most nights, especially during high school session. And so it was a very stressful time. And so in other words, in front of everybody else, I acted like I had it all together, but behind closed doors, I was an absolute wreck. And the only ones on the planet who knew about it was Avery and my dad. And, you know, as I was thinking about this the other day and about how I was going to talk to you about this, I remember so many conversations with my dad, and he would say things like, son, you can't keep doing all this. Now, this is from a minister who's been there, done that. You know what I'm saying? So I should have heeded that. But I would say, but here's how I would respond. But Dad, I have to. There's nobody else to do it, and this is my job. And he would say, well, have you asked somebody? And I would say, well, no, but I can't do that. And he would say, why not? And as I look back to that time, I never had a response for that answer. I circled that. And I would always just get back to, I'm just so stressed. And I would just change the subject and not answer that question. I never answered that question. And you know why? You know why I hadn't asked somebody and why I couldn't answer that question? Looking back, at the time, I wouldn't have told you this. But looking back now, I realize there was a lot of pride within me. In the moment, I felt like I was being selfless. But in reality, I was living out of pride. I was finding pride in my ability to carry all the chairs that I could carry. I was finding pride in my ability to be perfect. Because, by the way, that's what I did. I set the bar at perfection. Right? I wanted every lesson, no matter how many people were there or what was going on, it had to be perfect. Because I wanted to show others that I could. There's a part of me looking back that said I didn't want somebody else to teach those lessons because what if they did a better job than I could do? It was just so prideful. I think about the humility it takes to look at somebody else and say, I'm tired and I'm getting burnt out and I need help. I couldn't put myself in that place. And so, through those weeks, what happened is I started to get so anxious that I couldn't sleep. And so not only did I have a crazy schedule. Have you ever been here before? Am I the only one? You know what I mean? I mean, I know it's not probably with ministry and speaking engagements, although, you know, a few ministers here might understand. But you ever been in that place in life and you're just so overwhelmed? And so I couldn't sleep. And I remember one night I was laying in bed and my heart was just racing and it started to just pound in my chest. Just boom, 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 boom. Over and over. It sounded like thunder and I could hear it. You know, and it's one of those things where you can look down and you can see everything. And I was like, man, that's not okay. But I kept going and I kept going and pushed through. And then a few weeks after finally those three sessions ended, by the way, it took me a few months to recover just emotionally because I burnt out. You know what I mean? A lot of people there didn't know. And if, by the way, a lot of people from Whites Ferry Road often watch on live stream and will talk to me. And so some of my own youth kids might be there and I love you guys, but you drained me. But I was burnt out and I acted like I had it all together, but that every night it just wouldn't stop. And finally I said, Avery, I got to go see a heart doctor. So there was a heart doctor that went to church with us and I went to see him, Greg Sampanero, Dr. Greg Sampanero. He's a great doctor. And I went to see him and he did an EKG, did a stress test, took me up and he came back in. He said, yeah, you've got an enlarged heart. I said, well, that's a good thing, right? No, I didn't. But I actually, it scared me. Anxiety was running my life right at this point. And so when he came in, I was like, well, that doesn't sound good, you know? And he said, it's okay. It's something I see a lot, but it's something we need to take care of. He said, it is rare for you at 24 to have this. He said, it's caused because you've had a lot of stress and high blood pressure over a long period of time. So if you ever wonder why I love so much, now you know. I have an enlarged heart. But yeah, so he put me on some blood pressure medication. I've changed some diet things and done some things as far as exercise, although I haven't lately, so honesty moment, I got to get back to it. But I was able to get off of that for now. But heart disease runs in my family, and I was hearing this enlarged heart, and I realized I've really got to change some things. And looking back, I thought what I need to change is I've got to stop worrying about stuff. But in reality, what I needed to do was to let go of my pride. Pride was literally hurting my life spiritually and emotionally, but it was also affecting me physically. and I could no longer sleep. Now, here's the deal. I need you to understand this. Anxiety does not equal pride, okay? I need to say that because somebody here is relating with me, and then they're thinking, are you saying that my worry is pride? No. But pride can sometimes equal anxiety. In fact, I think most of the time your pride will eventually equal anxiety. Does that make sense? I need to be clear because I don't want somebody else who comes up who has some other reasons for anxiety that aren't pride to feel like I'm telling you you're prideful. You're not. But in my case, my anxiety was the cause of the pride within my heart. Anxiety was not my problem. Anxiety was the symptom that was leading to the large stress and worry and not sleeping. But anxiety was the symptom of the pride within my heart. I was carrying too many chairs. And so what I've learned today is that one of the most humble words that I can say is no. But it took me a long time to get here. To be okay when somebody says, hey, can you or will you or hey, let's go. And I say, I'm sorry, I can't. It takes a lot of humility, and it took me a lot of years to be okay with that. But I realized that there are some things that if I say yes to this, that means I have to say no to this, and this might be more important than that, even though that might be more urgent. And so I need to say no to the more urgent so I can say yes to the more important, like my wife and my child and my family and my health, right? It took me a while to get there. And so this was my struggle. Now I tell you all about this and tell you this personal story to start off because that's how pride played itself out in my life. And so when I read the story of Samson, I see a man who struggled with pride. He was very familiar with pride. And so we're going to spend just a few minutes looking at this man, Samson. Now there's three things I want you to notice quickly. The first is this, looking at Judges chapter 13. The first is this, Samson was a child with unbelievable potential. Unbelievable potential. A child with unbelievable potential. Look at chapter 13, verse 1. It says, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. That phrase is repeated constantly through the book of Judges. If you look back, you could just scan if you want to right now in your Bibles and flip some pages because it's usually at the beginning of a chapter that you'll see that verse. Again, Israel did evil in the eyes of the Lord. It's just this repetition here. And so God delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for, guess how many years? 40 more years, just like Moses. We talked about him last week, right? Like he had to spend 40 years in the wilderness because God needed to develop him. So don't you think he's doing the same thing here with Israel? They did evil again. And so he says, all right, back into the wilderness again. So here they are in the hands of the Philistines. It says, a certain man of Zorah named Manoah from the clan of the Danites had a wife who was sterile and remained childless. Verse 3, the angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, you're sterile and childless, but you're going to conceive and have a son. Now see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink, and that you don't eat anything unclean, because you're going to conceive and give birth to a son. No razor may be used on his head, because the boy will be a Nazarite. All right, and so if you looked at the law, for the Nazarite law, you would see that that's part of this. Can't get into all that. But he's set apart to God from birth. And he will begin the deliverance of Israel from the hands of the Philistines. This is a child with unbelievable potential. I mean, it's so much so that it even says that he is going to be set apart for God. And he's going to be the one to start the deliverance of an entire nation by himself who's been held captive by a nation more powerful than them for 40 years. And one boy, one child, was given that promise. It's absolutely incredible. Have you ever seen a kid and you just look at them and you see the way that they act, you see the way they make decisions, the way they love and share, and you just go, man, that kid's got some serious potential to be someone really special. You ever had that? You probably got that one person on your mind right now that you're thinking, there's that one young man, young woman who, man, if they hold true to their character, they're going to do some amazing things for the Lord. Well, that was Samson tenfold, right? He was an unbelievable child with unbelievable potential. And one man was given this destiny to be a man for God and set an entire nation free. So he's got great potential. that's pretty incredible. But not only does he have great potential, but he was a champion with undefeatable power. Right? This is more of what we think about when we think of Samson. Look at chapter 14 and verse 5 of Judges. Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring towards him. And the Spirit of the Lord came on Samson in power so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands as he might have torn apart a young goat. It's pretty incredible power there. He is a champion with undefeatable power. Your kids ever say, oh, the Bible's boring. I don't want to read the Bible. They ever read that one? Might be a little gruesome, huh? Put that one in your kid's story. You know, it's crazy. It's undefeatable power. But look at chapter 15 now, verses 14 and 15. We're going to be jumping around through this story, by the way. This is Samson. A series of events have happened where now the Israelites are having to hand him over to the Philistines. It all relates to his pride, but we don't have time to get there right now, okay? You can go and read it on your own. But here he is. He's bound and being handed over to the Philistines. And that's where we pick this up, verse 14. As he approached Lehi, the Philistines came towards him shouting. And again, listen to the pattern, by the way. It's a pattern we get to see, but that he misses. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power. And the ropes on his arms became like charred flax, and the bindings dropped from his hands. And finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it, and he struck down 1,000 men. He is a champion with undefeatable power. He is a child with unbelievable potential. I mean, if we were to stop right here at his story, you would look at him and see what he's done, and I think you would come to the same conclusion I do that says, how could he not be mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11 as a hero of faith? He's incredible. He's a child with unbelievable potential. He's a champion with undefeatable power. But both of those points are overshadowed by the last. He's also a character with unreliable performance. Right? He may have had the potential. He may have had the power. But he didn't have the performance to be a hero of faith. I'll tell you what. The only thing consistent about Samson is that he was consistently inconsistent. Right? He had unreliable character and unreliable performance. You never knew what Samson was going to do. The difference between Moses, by the way, I want to share this with you because there's a difference between Moses and Samson. Moses was a man of faith. Moses was consistently a man of faith. In fact, even when he murdered the man that he murdered, Acts 7, Stephen told us, remember, Moses was coming at that from the thought that God was going to use me to deliver the people. And so he thought he was doing God's will, but he ran ahead of God, right? It's not that he didn't have faith. He just sometimes ran ahead of God, right? Moses was a man of faith who made a 5-minute mistake that changed his entire life. Actually, he made two, because later in the wilderness, he also makes another 5-minute mistake and reacts to a situation in front of him. It was a bad reaction, and because of that, he doesn't get to enter the promised land. That's not Samson. Samson doesn't have just one 5-minute mistake that he makes, and other than that, he's a man of faith. Samson's different. He battled against one 4-letter word that he almost never overcame. Self. Samson had the potential and the power to defeat 1,000 men on the outside, but he didn't have the strength and ability to defeat himself on the inside. Samson's own worst enemy was himself. No one around him had the power to defeat him, but he certainly had the power to take himself down. You know what? Sometimes we can be our own worst enemy, can't we? Sometimes we can be so tough on ourselves. And everyone around us is looking at us and saying, you have so much potential, you have so much power, you have so much capability. And we look at ourselves and say, nah, nah. Because we stare in the mirror and we have this argument with ourselves and we say, nah, I don't like the one that's staring back at me. You're weak. You don't have potential. You've made too many mistakes. You're too far gone. You're not beautiful enough. You're not funny enough. You're too awkward. If you could just learn to speak or be social like that one person, or if you could just learn to be athletic like that sibling, or if I could just be like somebody else, then maybe, but no, not me. And we become our own worst enemy. But sometimes it's not just because we believe lies. Sometimes it's because we start carrying too many chairs and we can't learn to let down the pride and ask people for help or ask the Lord for help or say, you know what, I can't do this on my own. And that's what Samson and I were battling with. Judges 14, when he kills this lion. So you look back, if the story was complete at what we had just read, we would go, that's amazing. But the story of the lion was overshadowed. Because in Judges 14, what should you do after the Spirit of the Lord came on you and gave you power to be able to rip a lion in half and saved you? What should you be? It's time to go spread the power of God to other people. It's time to tell them what he did here. Notice that that's a pattern in Scripture a lot of times. When God does something incredible, I'm going to go and I'm going to tell that to others. The Scripture says, and you can look at it there in Judges 14, that he stayed silent about this thing, and he didn't even tell his mom and dad who were there with him, who were on the path, on the journey with him. He didn't even tell them about it. Instead, he makes a riddle out of the situation. He literally turns it into a joke so that everybody's coming up to Samson saying, Samson, come on, tell us the riddle. We're trying to figure this thing out. What's happened? What did you do? They didn't know the situation. And he's made this into a game to where everybody's going to be coming to him because it's all about him, right? So instead of taking an opportunity to glorify God, Samson has turned that opportunity into a moment to gratify himself. Have you ever done the same thing? Had an opportunity maybe to do something great or to glorify God, and instead you turned it into a moment to gratify yourself? You see, we're not done yet, though. Fast forward to the other event we read about. He kills 1,000 men with this jawbone of a donkey. And you remember David did something similar. He killed thousands of men, and they wrote a song about him. Remember, his own nation, his own people, they looked at David, they said, man, he's such a great man of faith. He's an awesome leader. Let's write a song about him. And they're like, David's killed, you know, or Saul's killed hundreds, but David's killed thousands, and Saul gets mad about it. You remember all that? But the thing is David was such a good person and had such reliable character that his own nation wanted to raise him up. Well, look at Judges chapter 15 and verse 15, because Samson has a song sung about him too. I don't know if you knew that. Sorry, verse 15. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, Samson grabbed it, struck down 1,000 men. And then Samson said, the nation didn't sing about him. Samson said, with a donkey's jawbone, I have made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jawbone, I have killed 1,000 men. And when he finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone, and the place was called Ramoth Lehi, which means Jawbone Hill. He named that himself. Come on. You know? No, a lot of times when something great happens, the name is attributed to God, right? The place is renamed something about the power of God at work here. This is where God did something great, but Samson's like, nah, it's Jawbone Hill. And I've slayed 1,000 men, and I killed these people, and I did it. And there's no mention of the Lord from Samson in his song. See the pride that's there. Here's the deal, folks. We're not even to the most popular and famous part of his story. I call it the Delilah debacle, right? We're not even there yet. And all you see is that he's got some unreliable character. Yeah, he had the potential and he had the power, unquestionable. But all that went to waste because he had unreliable character. I would stand and fight next to the guy who has the character over the power and the potential any day. How about you? The one, you might not be the most skilled, I might not be the fastest or the strongest, but I'll always be there. That matters more to me than 100 men who won't show up. So we're about to look at his pride even more, but let me tell you something. Humility is something we could all use a little bit more in our life, don't you think? You think our country, our nation, you think our world would be a little bit different if we could all learn a little bit of humility? Because nothing will destroy your faith faster than your pride. I want to quote a small section of the lesson that I taught this week at Celebrate Recovery on Thursday night. By the way, pride's talked a lot about in Celebrate Recovery. If you don't know about the ministry, I'd love to talk to you about it another time. But Celebrate Recovery, what I love is that it's a ministry where a lot of people walk in the door and they're really, really broken in an addiction or a hurt or a habit or a hang-up or some situation that's gone on. But here's the problem that we find ourselves in, is that most of the time when we step into that ministry, it's because I've been trying to fix myself by myself for so long, and then it didn't work, and now I've hit rock bottom, and I'm reaching, and I'm trying to find something that can give me some hope, and so I step into Celebrate Recovery. And what's amazing is that when you walk into that room, everybody else has already been there. Right? Like, you're not walking in by yourself. You're walking into a room full of people. But the thing is a lot of times you can tell the difference between the person who's already been broken or the person who's been forced to go there. Because the one who's been broken, the one who already hit rock bottom, they walk in with a lot of humility. But the one who walks in and they're forced to be there, you can see it in their body language. Right? You could see the pride. I don't need this. How is this going to help me? How's talking going to help me? How's a lesson about Jesus going to help me? How's a little open share going? I don't need this. I just need to do a little bit better. I need to try a little bit harder. I love to ask them. This is one of my favorite phrases in Celebrate Recovery. How's that working for you? Right? So I want to share with you quickly. Here's a part of the lesson that I shared. I said this. Be humble enough to say, God, I need your help. There is nothing that will block your recovery more than you. You can get in the way of your own recovery better than anything or anyone else on the planet. It's easy to point fingers and blame others for the problems in your life. But when we take ownership, when we let go of our pride, we can let God do his work in our heart and in our mind. Let me ask you something. Who would Samson have been if he could have heeded that advice? He had the potential and he had the power to be someone great and to do great things. Maybe we can learn from him. But none of this is the most important part of his story. You know the whole Delilah thing, most of you. Delilah is this woman. He has a woman problem, by the way. All right. And it didn't start with Delilah. If you think he had a Delilah problem, he didn't. He had a pride problem that led him to treating women and objectifying women and using women for his own gain. And so Samson has a problem with women way before Delilah. But then Delilah enters the scene, and she's wanting to find the secret of his strength, sell that secret to the Philistines for some money. And so he's lied to her 3 times at this point, as we're about to pick up in the text. He's already lied to her, told her lies about where his strength comes from. She really wants to know because she wants the money. And so she's crying, and she's saying, please, Samson, don't you love me? Will you please tell me? And Samson, being the fool that he is, tells her his secret, and that's where I want us to pick up. Judges chapter 16, we're going to read this quickly, and then we're going to conclude. Judges 16, we're going to start in verse 17. And so, he told her everything. No razor has ever been used on my head, he said, because I have been a Nazarite, set apart to God since birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as any other man. Now, when Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, come back once more. He's told me everything. So the rulers of the Philistines returned with silver in their hands, and having put him to sleep on her lap, he's sleeping on the enemy's knees. Sometimes you think you're all good, but the places that you're going, the people you're hanging with, the things you do during the week, you're sleeping on the enemy's knees. You're putting yourself in a really dangerous situation. That's what he did. And it bites him. Having put him to sleep on her lap, she called a man to shave off the 7 braids of his hair, and so began to subdue him, and his strength left him. And then she called, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He awoke from his sleep, and he thought, I'll go out just as before, and I'll shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza, binding him with bronze shackles, and they set him to grinding in the prison. But for even Samson, listen to this very powerful verse that I could preach a whole sermon out of, but I won't. But the hair on his head began to grow again, even after it had been shaved. Ooh. Our God's a God of second chances. Now, the rulers of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to celebrate, saying, "Our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands." Now listen to one of the most pathetic and sad verses of Samson's entire story. When the people saw who? Him, Samson. When the people saw Samson, they praised who? Their God. Think about how far he has fallen. The child with unbelievable potential and the champion with undefeatable power, but the character with unreliable follow through. And here he is. And when people see him, they don't worship Jehovah. They worship their God. I mean, that's the verse that gives me the chills. How far he's fallen. So they worship their God, saying, "Our God has delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who has laid waste to our land and multiplied our slain." Now, while they were in high spirits, they shouted, "Bring in Samson to entertain us." And so they called Samson out of the prison, and he performed for them. And when they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, "Put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple, so that I may lean against them." Now, the temple was crowded with men and women, and all the rulers of the Philistines were there. And on the roof were about 3,000 men and women, all looking down and watching Samson perform. And then Samson finally prayed to the Lord. Took him long enough. "O sovereign Lord, remember me. O God, please strengthen me just one more." And he's still got to hold on to a little bit of pride here, I just got to say. "Strengthen me once more and let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes." Notice, still a little bit of pride. It's not a complete change, but watch this. Here comes the verse that makes all the difference. Then Samson reached towards the two central pillars of the temple, bracing himself against them, his right hand on one, his left hand on the other. Samson finally says, listen to this, "Let me die with the Philistines." Man, if he had learned to say that phrase a long time ago. "God, let me die." Jesus says, whoever wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. You see, a cross is for death. And so what God is saying is every day you need to die to yourself. You need to die to your wants and your desires and your wishes and your will and your pleasures and your sin. You die to self and you live for him. You see, and finally now, when Samson's saying this, it's now taken the form of a physical death because there is nowhere left for him to go. But in one moment of faith, he prays to the Lord and he says, "God, I'm ready to die for you." And through that act of faith, he pushes over the pillars and the scripture says that he killed more people, more Philistines, more of the enemy in his death than he ever did in his life. All the pride of his living, he still outshined it when he finally prayed to God and said, "God, I'm ready to die for you." He finally, in one moment, unlocked some of that potential and unlocked that power and unlocked his character. And when they all worked together, he killed more people in one moment than he ever did in a lifetime. In basketball, one of the most important skills for a player is to be able to rebound. Rebounds happen because somebody's missed a shot, right? I mean, nobody can rebound if you make a shot. Rebounds only happen because somebody missed a shot. And if a shot's missed, that means a shot was attempted, but somehow something went wrong. In our case, it was pride, right? But somehow something went wrong in the attempt, and it caused the shot to be missed, and therefore, we have the need for a rebound. And you know what's interesting, though? The one who misses the shot is the same person who has the highest potential to grab the rebound. Because they're the ones who knows that when it left my hand, I can see it, I'm in the line, I can tell it's going off to the right. And so if I will just, instead of staying back lazily and watching the outcome, choose to plow ahead, even though I'm embarrassed that my shot's going to be missed, I'm still going to go forth and I'm going to put in the effort to get up there. I can grab the rebound before anybody else because I have more information than they have because I am learning from my mistake. In the Bible, there's a lot of people who missed a lot of shots. And Samson is one of those people. Moses is one of those people. Next week, we're going to talk about Rahab. She was one of those people. But they still made the list. And they didn't make the list because they made the shot. They made the list because of their rebound. So what I came here to tell you this morning is that no matter who you are or what you have done, and I understand that there are some of you out there, most of you out there, who have done a lot of things that you would be ashamed to tell other people about. I get that. I understand that you've made some pretty major mistakes and you've missed some pretty key shots. But no matter who you are or what you have done, if you have missed a shot and you have not lived into your potential and you have not lived into the power that God has given you to be someone great, but instead you've been living through your own pride, no matter who you are, here's what you need to know about God. He is a God of the rebound. He's a God of second chances. He's a God who rewards rebounds just as much as he does made shots. And so listen to me. It's not about how hard you fall. It's about how you get back up. That's what's going to define you. Folks, I don't know who needed this message this morning, but what I know is that someone needs to understand today that if Samson could rebound and make a list of heroes of faith in Hebrews 11, then it's not too late for you. It's not too late for your kid. It's not too late for your spouse. It's not too late for your family or for your friends or for that cousin or for that aunt or for that uncle who just hasn't seemed to live into their potential. Don't stop praying and don't stop communicating with them. A lot of people get so frustrated because of the missed shots in other people's lives that they literally shut them out and they say, I will never talk to you again. Don't do it because God is not a God of made shots. He's a God of the rebound. And there is still hope for those people too. So if you've missed your shot, if you've made some serious mistakes, whether those are 5-minute mistakes or whether it's like Samson, you've just been living a life not in the character that God wants you to have, but been living full of pride. If you've been living for yourself rather than God, I pray that this morning you will humble yourself and you will take a step that I needed to take many years ago when I had that stress and anxiety in my life when I was in youth ministry. To come forward this morning, you can walk out of here not saying, I can do this on my own if I just try a little bit harder. Leave your pride at the door, leave your pride in your pew, and come down forward and say, God, I need your help. I need your help. There is a lot of power, a lot more power in humility. The lesson's yours. Think about it. If you need to respond, once you come, as together we stand and sing.